This is an Alien UFO Podcast classic episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And I have a small number of UFO episodes that I released on the Our Paranormal Afterlife podcast a few years ago. They're full of great information, and I thought it would be a good idea to share them on the Alien UFO podcast for listeners who may have missed them the first time around. This episode dates back to August 2021. It features my conversation with Deborah Jordan Corbell, and she's talking about her book, Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders. Deborah has had extraordinary experiences throughout her life. The first book published about Deborah and her sister Kathy was a 1987 bestseller called Intruders. It was by the alien abduction researcher Bud Hopkins, and it was later adapted into a TV series. In her new book, Deborah shares her close-up and personal experiences with UFOs, poltergeists, the afterlife, electronic voice phenomena, premonition, synchronicities, and non-human entities. Hi, Deborah. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast. It's kind of you to give us your time. We're going to be talking about the book, Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders. So basically, what it says, Life Beyond Intruders, that's because there was a book called Intruders, wasn't there?
I think it was the bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list for several weeks, as a matter of fact. And there was a miniseries taken from it on CBS in 1992, I believe, with the same name, Intruders. And they, you know, took a lot of Hollywood license with it. Basically, there were a couple of scenes plus the title that were actually from Bud's book. The rest was all like a compilation of other people's experiences. And I guess they felt like they needed to jazz it up or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they'd like to do that, don't they? They did. It's like a Travis Walton when they made the movie of his experience that was pretty much a mess when it got to the actual point where he had contact.
Yeah, they, I don't understand why Hollywood feels the need to do that. If you just sit and listen to the actual experiences, that ought to do it. Yeah. I don't see the need for much more. Jazzing up.
It's like, because you look at that, what happened, you think, what, this isn't dramatic enough?
I know, right?
There's a thing in the book, I think you talk about you were missing once when you were a child, and you remember a boy with big black eyes.
Yeah, I was, my older sister, who also had some unusual experiences, she was about 11 years older than me, a little more than 11 years older than me. And she used to be friends with the girl that lived down the end of the street. And this girl didn't actually live there. Her grandparents did. She lived in Michigan, and she would come down and visit with her grandparents for the summer. That's how my sister and her met. And she had a younger sister that I also played with that was more my age. So once my older sister got her driver's license in her car, she decided, with my parents' blessing, take me and her to Michigan to visit Denise and her little sister. And so I went up there with my sister. It was only going to be for a couple of days, like a weekend trip. I remember playing out in the backyard with my friend and kicking a ball that went over the fence. And I ran and jumped over the fence to retrieve the ball. And as I started to come, I remember when I started to go back to the backyard, I realized I didn't know where I was. And I felt confused and lost. And I went around to the front of the house and I couldn't remember. I was trying to figure out in my head which house I was supposed to go to, trying to remember what it looked like. And there was a house in front of me and the front door was open. And I thought, that looks right. So I remember, and I walked into this house looking, you know, for my sister and anything familiar. And the house looked odd to me inside. I remember thinking, why is a lamp table on a chair? It should be next to it, or, you know, something familiar things, but not quite right, you know? And as I started to feel myself get panicky and turn around and leave, there was a little boy standing in the doorway between the doorway and myself. And I remember he looked like a normal boy. He had blonde hair and brown eyes, or big brown eyes, or big black dark eyes. And he wanted me to stay and play with him. And him talking to me kind of made me feel better. And next thing I know, he's telling me he has some toys that he wants to show me in a toy room. And so I follow him for the toys. And we go into this room. And I remember thinking, this room doesn't seem right. It was big and bright, and it didn't seem to have any furniture or anything in it. And I didn't even see light. I don't even remember seeing lights, but yet it was light in there. No windows, but yet it was light in there, you know, stuff like that. I noticed there was like an area in the front of it, or in the middle of it, that was like a sunken living room. I was sort of trying to visualize in my head how to describe it. But it was sunk down, and I remember at one point sitting on the edge of it, and then sitting in it, I believe sitting in it. I can't, you know, it's been 60 years ago, I can't remember. But and there was a specific toy that I played with that had, it was like a shoebox kind of thing with a hole in it, and it had strings across it, like a homemade, you know, guitar thing that I was supposed to pluck on the strings. Then the next thing that I remember is, well, I do remember a pain, it felt like something poked me in the leg and it hurt. But then I don't remember much else. I think I recall seeing a red flashing light on the wall, and it looked like some long, narrow table-like thing was coming out of the wall as this red light was flashing. And then the next memory I have is standing back out in front of the front door. The boy is there, and I'm leaving. His mother comes in the room. I think it's his mother anyway. That's who I thought it was. And she was really mad, and she seemed really big and mean and angry. And she yelled at the little boy, "What is she doing here? She doesn't belong here. She needs to leave right now." Bam. It's like, I felt like someone shoved me out the door. And yet I don't recall seeing anybody, you know, touch me. And as I stumbled out onto the walk path that led down to the sidewalk, I saw my sister standing at the end of the walkway. And I ran up to her, and I was so happy to see her. I just remember feeling so happy and relieved to see her. I knew I wasn't lost anymore. And I took her hand, and she walked me back to the house. I don't remember her saying anything to me. I don't remember anything else about the trip other than we went home. And then, you know, it was years later, Bud was there and we were talking. Bud had come to the house in the course of the investigation that began. We were talking about other weird things that had happened through the years. And I suddenly started to remember this. And I mentioned, I mentioned something about it. My mother remembered it. And my sister was able to get information to Bud to contact the people that we actually visited when we were there, who also confirmed that I'd been missing for like a whole day, and that it was my sister who found me, and that other people had been out searching for me. So, I mean, this was I was probably maybe kindergarten age, 5 or 6 years old. I mean, it's been a long time because I'm 62 years old, so it's been a long time. I remember certain parts of it clearly, and other parts of it I'm not so sure about, you know. So I wrote down what I was able to remember. And then my sister remembered, you know, taking me there and bringing me home. I don't recall whether she had too much extra to put into it or not. So I don't know.
It reminds me of something I read in a book about a woman who said she remembered when she was a child, she used to go and play with this young girl the same age as her at this house at the end of their street. And she said the memories were a bit weird. And so she's grown up now. She talked to her mum about the house at the end of the street. And her mum said, "No, that's waste ground. There's never been a house at the end of the street." And this woman was also, you know, having some kind of contact with ETs throughout her life. And but it's like with you, it's kind of like the if that was like ETs, I'll call them ETs. I don't know what else to call them, really.
Yeah,
it's,
I am.
It's almost like they can mess with your consciousness and your perception in some way, if it's kind of telepathic or something. So it may be a gray ET that's standing there, but you see a child. Is that a good interpretation?
It's possible. I don't know. I mean, I think I've heard other people interpret it that way. And honestly, I don't know, because I remember seeing a kid. And it's funny because my mother, which I didn't even know about this until Bud came and started to talk to the family and, you know, interview. But apparently my mom told Bud that when she was a little girl, she had a very vivid memory of being chased through a wooded area by a little boy. And she was scared of him. And I, you know, I thought, wow, she had never said that before to any of us. And that when Bud had asked her about things that might have happened to her when she was young, and she immediately thought of that and told him, I thought, wow, that's weird, because I've never heard her say anything about that before. So I don't know. I've heard people refer to things as screen memories, like they're able to project something into your mind that you see that you're not as terrified of or more comfortable with. I've heard people refer to like screen memories of aliens that look like owls or animals, deer of some kind. I don't know. I suppose anything is possible when we're talking about stuff like this, you know. But I remember a boy.
Yeah, because I heard about somebody was driving down the road and they stopped and there was an owl standing in front of the car. And he thought to himself, hang on. An owl, that'd have to be 4 feet tall. There's no such thing as a 4 foot tall owl.
Yeah, I've never heard of one.
So moving on, then was there an incident when you were 17 years old while you saw a UFO while you were in a car, and then there was some kind of a memory of going into an operating theater?
Well, I was, I was probably 17. It was before I got married. Maybe 16, probably 17. I was with actually two girls, and I was not the driver. I was passenger in the front seat, and my friend Dolores was driving. And then there was another gal in the back seat. I didn't know her very well. She was more friends with Dolores than me. And we were, this is what we did. I lived in, you know, I grew up in a rural area, and well, I lived in Indianapolis, which is not a rural area, but I grew up on the Far East Side, and out that way is a lot of farmland and open field. And we used to like to go roller skating on Friday and Saturday night for fun. And my girlfriend's boyfriend didn't show up to roller skating that night, and had, I guess he told her some excuse. And so after we left the roller skating rink, she decided we were going to go stalk him and go. He lived in a big farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere. And we decided to go drive by his house and see if his car was there like it was supposed to be, you know, to teenage girl stuff. And so I had nothing in it. I was just along for the ride. But while we were out there in the middle of nowhere, I noticed a funny light in the sky that seemed to move strangely. It was pretty bright. And it's, you know, at first I thought it was just a bright star. And then I thought, ooh, that's kind of weird. It started moving weird. And I believe at one point I said, hey guys, look, it's a UFO or something like that. And actually me and Dolores were kind of giggling, and the little girl in the back seat with us, the girl with us, got really freaked out, and she started saying, don't say that, you guys, you're freaking me out, you know. And so we were kind of tickled at her. We weren't laughing at the light, but we were kind of laughing at how she reacted to it. But then it started getting closer and being even weirder. And then the next thing I remember consciously was the car was not moving, and it seemed like we were being enveloped by this black cloud that was just coming all around the car, and I couldn't see anything, couldn't see anything outside. And I felt like I was being dragged out of the car by my legs. I don't remember seeing my friends. I remember, and I don't, and this is weird, I don't ever believe that I actually remember going into or coming out of anything. It's like something happens and then I'm there and then I'm back where I started. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't remember going into a ship, so to speak. You know what I mean? Anyway, later I remembered some kind of a physical examination that was very painful and was down in my lower abdominal area and my female area, and it was very painful and very frightening. But the next thing I remembered after that is I think I was in the car, but my friend who was driving was outside looking at the light in the sky. And then all of a sudden, I think we realized that, you know, we had to hurry up and get back home because we had to take this other girl home that was laying on the floorboard now and crying because she was so scared. I had to take her home, and we had to hurry up and get back to my friend's house so we could sneak in before her parents' alarm clock went off and they would get up to go to work because they wouldn't have liked us being out running around all night long. So, and then, you know, I remembered it. That was in the fall, I believe. And I was about 17. And I remember years later when Bud came and started asking, he interviewed all friends, neighbors, coworkers, all kinds of people involved in my life and the weird stuff that happened to me. And I hadn't really talked to this gal for several years. We just kind of drifted apart after, you know, I got married and I had kids, and then she stayed single, and I don't know, we just kind of drifted apart after those years. But then I got a hold of her. My older sister was friends with her older brother. So through my older sister again, I got a hold of her, and her Bud and I went to see her and talk to her. And I introduced him to her. And then I asked her, "Do you remember that night we went to go spy on Kenny?" And she's like, "Yes, I do." And Bud said, "I'd like to ask you about the light that you and Debbie and the other girl saw out when you were out on in the middle of nowhere one night." She said to him, "You mean the light on the light in the sky or the light on the ground?" And when she said that, I got goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps right now when I say it again, because it's like, what are you talking about, the light on the ground? And then as soon as she said that, it started to like trigger something out, more memories that started trickling back eventually. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bud asked her, she didn't really have very much memory of anything to add to it. And he asked her if she would like to be regressed and to remember more. And she immediately said, "No, thank you. Absolutely not." And she was, I could tell, I've known her for years, and I could tell she was, whatever she did remember, she wasn't going to talk about, and it kind of shook her up. And I remember her saying, "You know what? I have lived all these years and not known. And I think I'm fine. I don't want to go there and stir anything up." And Bud's like, "That's fine. I totally respect that, you know." And he didn't push her, and I certainly didn't. I mean, after that, there was one other time I saw her, and we never spoke about that. And I haven't seen her since.
It's one of these kind of multiple sightings, multiple experience where people can verify each other, isn't it? It's sometimes skeptics can say it's just one person experiencing this thing, and where, you know, there's no sense of lots of people verifying it, but you have,
well, you know,
multiple people.
Yeah, well, that's where most of the stuff in my life has been, the weird stuff. Even June 30, 83, which was the big thing that left the mark in the yard and all the other little things. There were two different neighbors that witnessed something that night. Then there was another neighbor who wrote Bud a letter 20 years later with another thing that could possibly be linked to it. There was the mark in the yard itself. My mother was there that night. The three people that I interacted with that night were there. So it was not like it was just me. And I've always said, if all of this weird stuff just always happened to me and no one else was ever around to see anything or witness any weird stuff with me, I already seriously doubted sometimes my own, you know, mental health and wondered if I was losing my mind. I would be definitely a lot more, I would definitely be thinking that, you know, maybe it's just me. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And I remember when I went to New York, like one of the first people that I met, the very first trip I ever went to New York was that psychiatrist that Bud had been working with, Dr. Clamart. Her name was Aphrodite Clamart. I thought, what a cool and unusual name. But
yeah,
she was a super nice woman, made me feel very, very at ease. And I appreciated that because I was already wrapped too tight. But when I had the psychological testing done, there was verbal and written psychological testing done on me. And I remember telling the psychiatrist that was testing me with the verbal testing, you know, it's okay if you tell me I'm crazy, because I know they make pills for that. And I am good with taking a pill if that means that this is going to stop, you know, because at that point in my life, I had a lot of fear and anxiety, and I wasn't dealing with it really well. I have adapted over the years and I have changed, and a lot of that fear and anxiety has dropped away as I have grown, and my contact, whatever you want to call it, has gone from the physical, painful and terrifying and all that other stuff that goes along with it, to a different level and a different kind of contact. It's almost, it's gone into like vivid dreams and just, it seems like it's on a different level, the contact that I have now. It's not so much physical. And sometimes I wonder, was the physical contact early in my life necessary in order to facilitate this new level of contact now? I don't know. Or was I just born that way, you know, with a extra wiring or something? I don't know. I just, you know, I'm trying to rationalize and figure it all out for myself. That's where I go to, that's why I go to like that.
If you look back on your life and all this contact you have, if it could all be taken away, would you now say, no, I want it. This has made me who I am.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been asked that. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked that over the last 35 years, and I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, I've had really bad stuff happen to me in just life, but I've always come through it all better, stronger and smarter, wiser, you know, and this is no different. And as a matter of fact, if I hadn't met Bud, if I hadn't had this experience, I would have never met Bud. Had I never met Bud, I would have never met my late husband. I would not, and if I hadn't met him, I wouldn't meet my current husband. I would not have the life I've had now. My kids wouldn't have the life they had. They wouldn't have met their spouses. I wouldn't have the grandchild. I mean, there is absolutely nothing even remotely recognizable about my life now had I not had these experiences early in my life and my childhood and met Bud, which led me to Bud. You know, I mean, I feel like everything happens for a reason, whether I understand it or not at the time, but the bigger picture knows what it's doing.
So you mentioned 1983. So what did happen at that time?
I was living with my parents. I had recently moved back there. Well, not too recently, but I'd moved back there because I had two little kids to raise and I was trying to figure out my life. And thank God for my parents that I had a place I could go, and my mom helped me with my kids and I helped my mom with the house. And so anyway, I was living with my parents at the time, and they had a big swimming pool in the backyard with a pump house. And it was a nice big sandstone tri-level. And I was preparing to go cut some patterns out with a friend who lived the street behind us. And so I was washing my hands at the sink, looking out the window, and I happened to notice this weird light in the yard, in the pump house of the swimming pool. And I thought in my head, what? That was odd. It shouldn't be there. But I couldn't really put my finger on it at the time why I just thought it was weird. I think later I came to the realization that the light was not quite the right color. It was more of a bright white instead of a incandescent light bulb kind of light color. But at the time, I didn't connect that. I just thought it was weird that the light was on, the door was cracked open. And I mentioned it to my mom before I left, and she didn't seem worried about it. But it was nagging me in the back of my head because I was about to leave my mom with my two little kids. And my dad worked the third shift at the Ford plant there in Indy, so he wasn't going to be home for a little while. So I decided that before I left, I was going to drive down the side driveway and to the turnaround that was in front of Dad's workshop back behind the swimming pool and just, you know, look around. And I wasn't there. Aliens and UFOs or anything weird was not in my mind at the time. I was thinking about prowlers, burglars, somebody trying to break in, you know. So I did that. I drove around the side and came back up and didn't see anything amiss, although I did realize that the pedestrian door of the garage was open. So, but I did not stop. Could have, but I didn't. I just went ahead and went to Deanna's house, which was right behind the next street behind. And as soon as I got there, I called my mom and I told her what I'd seen. And she was, again, she didn't seem to be too concerned about it. She just said, I'll lock the doors and your dad will be home, more or less. We'll be fine. And I said, are you sure? And she's like, yep. So I hung the phone up. And as soon as I hung it up, it rang like almost instantly. Just so quick, but I snatched it right back up. And it was mom. And she said, I want you home right now. And I'm like, what's wrong? You know, her voice sounded scared, and my mom never got scared of anything. And my friend and her husband were in the same room, and they were hearing this conversation. And her husband says, tell them to call the police. That's what they get paid for. And mom heard him, and she said, no, I don't want anybody here but you. And I'm like, okay, I'll be there in a few minutes. You know, I just had an epiphany while I was telling you this. In retrospect, I don't know. She called me right back instantly, practically. And yet a week later, she says, you know, I just realized why I called you to come home. And I said, why? And she's like, well, I was standing at the kitchen window and I saw this white ball of light around the bird feeder. And I thought it was like a flashlight beam or a headlight beam, but I didn't see anybody. And she said it got smaller and smaller until it disappeared. And as soon as it disappeared, that's when I thought to call you. And I'm thinking that must have happened really quick because she called right back. But anyway, see how I get distracted. So anyway, I came back home, pulled back up that same side driveway, and I went in the back of the house through what we used to call the patio room or the Florida room. It was an add-on my dad built. And there was a trash compactor out there, and next to it, my dad kept his shotgun. And since we had moved back home with the kids, it was unloaded because I didn't want a loaded gun near my kids or where they could get around it. And so I picked it up. My mom says, you know, that's not loaded. And I said, yeah, I do. But the guy I'm about to smack upside the head with doesn't, you know, I mean, I told her if I encounter somebody out there, they're not going to know it's not loaded until I've gotten close enough to hit him with it, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm not that brave. That was out of character for me to go out there and do that or to even pick up that gun. But I did it. And I didn't see anything in the pump house. I did find my dog, who was supposed to be in the garage outside under Dad's ladder truck, but she would not come out to me. And then I went into the garage because I thought, well, there's anybody out here, that's where they'll be. The garage door was clearly open, and it was not open, you know, wasn't supposed to be open when I left. So I was in there walking around, and there was a mattress leaned up against the wall. And I thought, well, I didn't see anybody in the garage. So if they were hiding, that was the only place left to hide. And as I started to look behind that mattress, I suddenly got this feeling that I was on fire. And I thought, oh my God, I got to get out of here right now. This terror just welled up in me. And I turned around and headed for the door. As I got to the open doorway, something hit me in the chest. And in my mind, over the years, I think, I wonder if that's what it was like to get hit by lightning. I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm dying. And this light was so bright and intense that I know my eyes were closed, but I could still see it. And it was still so intense that it hurt. And I could feel this vibration start to in my core and just spread down my legs and my arms and my head. And it felt like, and I'm trying to figure out for years how to describe this. It felt like every molecule in my body was vibrating independently, you know, like I was coming apart molecularly almost. And I couldn't move. And it felt like time kind of stopped. I have no idea how long that went on. My logical mind tells me I don't know if I would have survived very much of it, so it couldn't have been too long, but I had no idea how long it went on. And then the next thing I know, I'm a little bit farther out the doorway, and there's a big cement patio out there, and felt like someone pulled down on my shoulder from behind me. I did not see anybody behind me or close to me at that point. And it felt like somebody stabbed me in the ear with a hot poker. Like, I am in my mind, I could see like a knitting needle that was red hot. That's what it felt like. And then I still couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I heard a voice, a disembodied voice. I didn't see anyone. I heard a voice say it was unfortunate that I had felt pain. And then that's when I started to notice movement in the yard. And my eyes were blown. My eyes were so trashed. It was like a dozen people with the old type flash cubes took my picture at the same time, and I didn't blink fast enough. And it was like I had these white blotches in my vision that were so intense that it hurt, but I could still see movement in front of me. I couldn't see a lot of detail, and it was kind of dark, but I couldn't see, you know, I could see movement. And I thought there were kids in my mom's yard. And I remember thinking, why are these kids in our backyard? There were six of them, and they were coming from all different kind of directions. But they all kind of lined up off to my right, up farther in the yard. And then they all kind of like slid down sort of in front of me. And as I'm watching them, I see this thing to my left, and it's not that far from me. And in front of me, there's about 25 feet or so, there's a basketball size white ball of light, but it doesn't hurt like the whatever hit me. It doesn't hurt to look at it. I could see it, and it went down really slow, and then it came back up really slow. And I felt that it was looking at me. I don't know why I thought that, but I felt like it was looking at me. And then the thing that I saw, I didn't want to look at it, but I didn't not want to look at it because I wanted to know where it was and if it was coming closer to me. And it was egg-shaped, and it wasn't very much bigger than the pump house, so it wasn't very big. And it almost seemed that it wasn't quite all the way on the ground. I didn't know whether it was my eyes or was this thing really kind of wiggling just ever so slightly. and it had some long appendages off of it that came from the center of it. But they didn't really look like they were very strong, like they could hold anything up weight-wise. So I don't know what those were. And these little kids went into this thing. And, you know, I thought of, we call it a craft for years. I mean, for lack of any other thing to call it. But, you know, when you think about it, there's no way that even six little kids could have gone anywhere. I can't in my mind think that they got in this thing and then flew, you know, 3 light years away. That doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't seem logical or possible. I don't know what that thing in the yard was that night, but they went into it. That's all I know. And then I remembered at some point thinking, oh my God, my kids. And as soon as I thought that thought, the voice came back and said, your kids are fine. Your children are fine. And then I heard my name. And as soon as I heard my name, it was like someone snapped their fingers and everything I just described to you went away. It's like my mind was wiped. I felt weird. I remember thinking as I walked up the steps, I don't want to go back and sew. I just want to go swimming. I just want to get wet and go swimming. I don't want to do anything. My mom said, it was my mom actually that called my name. I didn't even realize that for a while, but it was actually my mom that did. She stuck her head out the back door and called for me. And that's what snapped me back to this reality. Anyway, she says, is everything all right? And I said, yeah, everything's cool. And I said, I think I'm going to ask the aunt if they want to come back and swim. She's like, okay, that's fine. So I went and I asked my friend and she's like, yeah, that's fine. Because this was a nice swimming pool and it was almost, you know, the July 4th weekend and it was hot and it was a good night. So her and her daughter and I came back and I think it wasn't too terribly long after we got back that my dad actually came home. So that gave us a frame of reference on the time. But as we walked across the backyard, my friend's daughter thought she stepped on a bee or something because something stung her foot and then her foot started to get numb. And her mother looked her foot over and everything and we didn't see anything. So she's like, well, get in the swimming pool. The cold water will help it if it's a bee sting. And within, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes of being in the pool, all of us started feeling crappy, nauseated, and my eyes were hurting and burning, and I started noticing halos around all the lights outside. And my friend and her, I don't know what she was thinking, but she's like, hey, let's go to White Castle. If in America, White Castle is one of these places that has these little tiny square hamburgers, and we used to call them gut bombers. If you're nauseated, White Castle is probably the last place you want to go get something to eat, but they are open 24 hours. So,
right, okay.
We decided, okay, we thought that sounded like a good idea at first. So we got dried off and we started to go to White Castle, but then we aborted that. And they went home and I came back because we just felt too crummy. And the next morning when I woke up, my eyes were swollen completely shut. I couldn't see. I was in excruciating pain. So my mom took me to the emergency room. And from the emergency room, I was taken to an actual eye doctor's office because the guy in there said they didn't have the equipment to properly examine me in the emergency room. And he had an office across the street and asked my mother to take me over there, which she did. And the first thing that he asked me was, have you looked into the arc of a welder's torch? And I'm like, no, no. And I thought, why would you ask me that? That's weird. And you have to remember, at this point, I didn't remember seeing that light. So I couldn't have told him that if I wanted to, because I hadn't fully remembered that. So, you know, I had eye drops and a gooey cream, and it took several weeks for my eyes to recover. And honestly, I was diagnosed with cataracts and macular degeneration in my late 30s. And by the time I hit 50, I have already had new lens implants in my eyes. And I'm the only person in my family, other than my older sister, who also had UFO experience. She has wet macular degeneration, and she had cataracts as well. Well, my eyes have never been the same since that night in June, and I will always, in my mind, blame that night. I can't prove it, but that's just how I feel. I could be wrong, but I really feel like whatever happened to my eyes that night wrecked them. From that point on, my vision was never the same. For like a year or so after that, my eyes would burn and water for no reason, and I couldn't see. So I really feel, and I don't feel it was malicious. I don't think it was an intentional thing. I think it was a side effect that, you know, that they didn't do anything to me on purpose to hurt me. But anyway, so my eyes were wrecked. I started having nightmares right away. Panic and anxiety were high level. I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't go to the bathroom in the bathroom upstairs at night with the window that overlooked that part of the yard. And even at that point, I didn't realize what was going on and why I was feeling so paranoid and panicky. And I would sit in a chair or lay on the floor between my kids' twin beds and mama in their room at mom's. And I would be like awake all night, like I was waiting for something, but I didn't know what, protecting my kids. And then when someone would get up in the morning and the sun would come up, I'd feel like exhausted and I'd sleep for a little bit. But so I like, that's why I said, thank God for my parents. They knew something was happening and they supported me and helped me and my kids. But, it was the following few days later, 4th of July weekend. So just a few days later, the whole family came over to shoot off fireworks and swim and have a cookout, because that's what we did. And the kids all ran through the back door and out to the pool. And my oldest nephew came running back in immediately. And he's like, Grandma, what's wrong with your yard? So all of us adults went out there and looked. And there was that mark. It was like an 8-foot circle, right, you know, about 20 feet from the concrete patio. And it wasn't very far. My dad had a 100-foot ham radio tower out back there. And it wasn't too terribly far from that. And then it had a long, like 49-foot swath. A street came off one side of it, and it ended in a perfect arc. It was perfect. And it was exactly 2 feet wide all the way down. And all the grass in it had turned kind of a grayish beige and just looked like it wasn't crushed, but just looked like it laid over and died. And the dirt was rock hard. And it seemed as if part of it was a little bit pushed up on one side, and there was a great big crack in it. And it had a little bit of a weird smell to it. And my mother said, oh, that's where our UFO landed the other night. And I looked at her and I remember thinking, what did you say that for? Because it, you know, I didn't think it was funny. And then I looked back down at the mark in the yard, and that is when I started to remember the light and the kids and the thing. And I mean, everything started coming back. And in the following weeks and months, more things came back, more memory came back, not only of that night, but of other things that had happened in my life previously that I couldn't believe I had forgotten about. So, and I started doing weird stuff. I started having like visions of symbols and phrases of words and phrases that would nag my mind until I wrote it down or drew it on paper. And once I got it out of my head and put it somewhere where it wouldn't get lost or changed, then it would leave me alone and I could go on. So, and this went on for months. I drew a lot of, you know, symbols and shapes and things. Had more weird dreams and memories. Mostly I call them dreams because that seems like the only logical way to, you know, live with it when you can't. I couldn't prove it So it's going to be in the dream category, whether it really was or not. I don't know. And I was physically sick for like the whole year. My immune system went to hell in a handbasket. Every creepy cootie that came through town, I caught. I'd swell up. My glands would swell up in my neck. I'd break out in little hives for no reason at all. My eyes would burn and water. My hair got really thin. My fingernails got paper thin and would peel and like could almost peel off. And the dog that had been out there with me that night, by that fall, she had to be put to sleep because all of her hair started falling out. And we thought she had the mange because she looked like she had mange at first. If you've ever seen a dog with mange, it's pretty gross, but you can tell what it is. But then the hair started coming off in other places where she couldn't even rub. And then she started getting these big black oozy sores on her back. But then her teeth were falling out in her food bowl. And you could see that she was blind. I mean, her eyes were white, whited over quickly. She wasn't really young when all this happened, but she wasn't that old either. And when we finally had to put her down, you know, the vet just said she's clearly suffering, and she was. We could tell she was suffering. So I feel like it was the right thing to do, even though I felt bad about it because I don't like doing that kind of thing ever.
It almost sounds like radiation poisoning or something. But did you say in the book that a man was caught in the back garden looking at the mark on the grass?
Yes, that was this. It was after we had, or right about the time when we first met Bud and we're starting to do investigations. It was either right before that or right after that, but it was really soon after the mark in the yard happened. So, I mean, the book, you know, wasn't even, there was no book or anything like that. So it was not like some stranger could read the book and find us, you know. We were gone one day and we got a phone call from the neighbor next door. And she said that she was worried because she had seen a man in our backyard. And she said she didn't know she didn't think we were home, which we weren't. And was just letting us know she'd seen a man in the backyard. He had on a business suit and he was carrying a big briefcase and he was driving a big sedan. And he went out where the mark was and he did some stuff in the yard and then he left. We had people pull up. My dad would sit in the window and watch the bird feeder. He had his spot where he had his coffee and his cigarette every morning. So he would sit there while we'd be sitting at the kitchen table, just having coffee. Some people would drive up the side driveway where I had gone and they'd drive around the turnaround. Then they'd stop, they'd jump out of their cars, take pictures of the backyard and then jump back in their car and leave while we're sitting there. And my dad kept trying to catch him, but we could never catch him.
Was there black helicopters as well?
Well, that happened, yeah, that happened. It was probably a year or so, a couple of years later. And they flew around the house back and forth for years. I mean, we'd see them. My older sister claims that she was out driving one day in the country part out farther where there wasn't, you know, buildings, and a black helicopter came down almost on top of her car and followed her for a long time. That I have taken multiple pictures of them. I've called Indianapolis International Airport. I called Fort Benjamin Harrison and asked them about these helicopters and why, what are they doing? And somebody at Indianapolis International said, well, they got to have number on them. And I'm like, there was one helicopter that did have a number on it, but the rest of them did not have numbers on them anywhere. And I told her that, and she's like, well, they don't, that's impossible. And I'm like, no, it's not. I have pictures. So, and they were close. One time we had one that circled our house on Washington Street so many times that my neighbor actually called from across the street to see if we were all right, because she thought it was a police helicopter. And they were so low that it was shaking our house and our windows. And it's like, obviously this is not some kind of covert spying. I don't know what purpose this would serve. Why did whoever was doing this do this? It made no sense to me. But I have plenty of pictures of them.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to harass you. But then again, it's not like you have any control of whether or not you have a UFO encounter.
I don't know who they were or what they were up to. I'm just glad it finally stopped because it scared my kids.
Chapter 4, that's full of stories, but it's not like it's definitely UFO activity. And you say it's almost like you had experiences that your people would say this is a poltergeist, and you had all sorts of weird things happening.
Oh yeah. And there were a lot more than what was in the book, but that's just the stuff that I had remembered and I wrote down. But there were periods of time for months at a stretch when it would be some weird thing would happen to one of us daily. Like my little sister, who she's never said that she's had any kind of experience like this, you know, extraterrestrial wise or see the alien things. But she and her boyfriend were downstairs making out one day. They were teenagers, and we had a pool table in the basement, and there was also a cabinet in the basement that was like a big metal wardrobe almost, but it was old and messed up and didn't latch. So we had taken a coat hanger and wrapped it around the knobs to help it hold it closed. And they were downstairs making out by the pool table, and all of a sudden, Sherry said it was like somebody kicked the door out from the inside, and the coat hanger unwound and the door burst open, but there wasn't anybody in it, and it scared the hell out of them, obviously. And I've been downstairs, mom was downstairs many times, and we know we are home alone, and you'll hear multiple people walking around upstairs. And you'll maybe hear the stereo turning on and off a bunch of times, TV turning on and off a bunch of times. And you know there's no one there. You're there all by yourself during the day. And yet you hear all this commotion upstairs. It sounds like a bunch of little kids running around everywhere. Except that they're not my little kids, because I know where they're at. My mom, she liked to watch soap operas, and she'd sit down in the lower family room area, and it had a big mirror across one side, halfway up the ceiling. And it had two big swag lamps on either side, and the opening of the swag lamps hung down facing the floor. But it was open, so it was easy to change the light bulb. So mom was sitting there watching her stories one day, and she got up off of the couch to go upstairs to fetch something, and she heard a pop, and she turned around and looked, and one of the light bulbs in the swag lamp exploded, which that in and of itself was maybe not a big deal. But what was weird was when it did, all of the glass from the shattered light bulb dropped right down below the opening of the lamp and then shot across the room and sprinkled itself all over where she had just gotten up. That's not possible, you know, but it happened. My mother had no reason to tell such a story. She was the only one that saw it, but I've no reason to doubt her. My mom was not one prone to fantasy. And like time mom, Kathy and I were all sitting in the kitchen. At that time, we all smoked, and we were all drinking coffee and talking. And mom had one of those great big glass amber ashtrays in the middle of the kitchen table. And I reached over to flip my ash in the ashtray. And just as I did, that big, heavy amber glass ashtray snapped in half with a real loud pop sound. It was bizarre. But what was even more bizarre was one side, it snapped exactly in half. And one half slid to one side of the table, and one half slid to the other side of the table, and all the mess that was in the ashtray was sitting still in the middle of the table. And three different reactions from the three of us. My mother, she was mad that the ashtray broke. She was like, that was expensive. My sister was freaked out and was like, see ya, I'm going home. She didn't want no part of it. And I was like, oh man, that was cool. So it's three different reactions from one thing, you know, in the household. I mean, we grew up with that stuff happening a lot anyway, but it really accelerated after June 30, 83. And the really interesting part is that years later, mom passed away, you know, almost 20 years ago. Daddy passed away 7 years later. And the house, obviously, we had to sell the house. My dad went to a nursing home. And so we had to sell the house and all the stuff. And the person who bought the house, as it turned out, went to high school with somebody that I knew. And a few years back, I got, you know, years later after they bought it, I got contacted by this gal. She's like, hey, my BFF bought your mom and dad's house. And she kind of knew the story of what had happened there. Now, the woman that bought the house, I don't think they knew anything about it. But of course, my friend filled them all in. But from what I understand, the people who bought the house never had anything weird happen, never seen anything weird. It's since, you know, so apparently it was us and not the house that was, you know, creating or attracting all this weirdness.
We've almost run out of time, and I've got so many more questions for you. Would you like to do this again sometime?
Yes, I'd love to. That'd be great.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. The book is called Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders, and that's out on Amazon and other places, is it?
Yeah, you can get it from Amazon. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it from BarnesandNobles.com, BooksAMillion.com.
Do you have a website?
Yes, I have a website that people can contact me through, and that is www.debshome.com.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And that was an interview with Deborah Jordan Corbell about her book, Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders. Now, a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended episodes. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFOpodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you'll have an extended episode every month. And if you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.